Welcome to the Washington Updates podcast from the National Association of Health Underwriters. This podcast is being recorded on Thursday morning ahead of an expected vote in Congress on a Cromnibus to fund the government through mid-February, extend funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program by 6 years, and delay both the Cadillac and health insurance taxes. Marcy Buckner and John Green join us on this week's installment to discuss the latest deal-making in the halls of Congress, how NHU has worked to influence this process, and what it will mean for you and your clients. The continuing resolution omnibus, or Cromnibus, as some in Washington call it, includes several wins for NHU that we have been lobbying for over the past year. How are these expected to work now that we are already into 2018? And what is the long-term outlook for full repeal?
So the pieces in the continuing resolution that we're hearing that have been agreed upon and should be moving forward are the two-year Cadillac tax delay to 2022. So if you all remember back in 2015, we were working very hard to get a delay or full repeal of the Cadillac tax. At that point, it was going to go into effect January 1 of 2018. And in 2015, we were successful in getting a two-year delay to January 1 of 2020. That, of course, feels like it is just around the corner. And so we've been working again for a repeal or delay. And here in the continuing resolution, there has been an agreement to include a two-year delay of the Cadillac tax. So delaying it from that initial delay to January 1, 2020, to January 1 of 2022, which will give, I think, a little relief to our employer folks that work in the employer group that have those clients that have been trying to plan out the way that they're doing their benefit designs to try to avoid hitting the Cadillac tax. I know some of you all have already started doing that for the impending implementation for 2020. Here, it would move to 2022. Again, this is not bit passed, so I want to caveat that. But as soon as we have something that has passed, we'll make sure you all are aware of the new deadline for the Cadillac tax.
There's a suspension of the premium tax in 2019. Notice I did not say for 2018. That has already been baked into the cake, and Ways and Means and leadership has told us that there are a lot of issues in trying to figure out how you would, quote, rebate. I prefer premium reduction, but how you would return those additional dollars back to consumers, including Medicare Advantage seniors, people in the commercial market, and state governments that have paid the tax. So,
and this is the health insurance tax, the HIT tax. John referenced it as the premium tax. But for those of you who have heard us talk about this a lot, it's also called the HIT tax. So that's what we're referencing.
So for now, it's only a suspension of the tax in 2019. But should they pass it, which we will talk about today, and the Senate passes it and becomes law, we'll get another bite at the apple at the 2018 year, hopefully down the line, perhaps in an omnibus bill later. There's one other provision. It also delays for 2 years the device tax.
Right. And the issue that we're seeing here with it possibly being stalled and may not be moving forward, we're hearing they're right at the cusp on the House side to have enough support to be able to pass this. But there is a lot of concern that they may not have the 60 votes that they need in the Senate to be able to pass this. And the concern there is that it does not include a deal on DACA or for the Dreamers, which is something that a lot of members of Congress were hoping to get through in this continuing resolution. And there's also a 6 year for CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Plans. And that was thought to be a victory by Senator Hatch and others. And then we've heard President Trump coming out saying that he would want long-term support longer than the 6 years. So there may be some hesitancy for support, even with the 6 year continuance on the CHIP plan that's been put into place. So there's still talks going on here about whether we're going to see this pass. And tomorrow is the day.
Well, today is supposed to be, yes, when the government runs out of money. So, was on the Hill this morning, and it looks like 50-50 at best in the House, because the defense folks have not gotten enough money that they want. And without the defense folks, there's no way they can pass it without bipartisan support. The Democrats are whipping this as a no, in part because of DACA as well. And the Freedom Caucus is, as usual, not very cooperative. There are some Freedom Caucus members who will vote for it, but there's a substantial block that won't. So without the defense members, it's going to be really difficult to pass today. And then, as Marcy mentioned, President Trump's comments this morning about CHIP make it all the more difficult. As Marcy said, the Senate is not ready to play ball. We understand that Senator Schumer would take it up to 49 to give some of his members cover, but won't allow it to get to 50. So where does that leave us? Well, we'll probably be shut down for a few days at least through the weekend. And well, they'll probably try to do something on Monday. But this is not good optics for anyone. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. The gift that we got from CHIP funding scoring, where it had one time scored as coster and they were fighting over how to pay for it, which is why it's been delayed this long, to now creating enormous savings magically. And so we have this perfect alignment on the healthcare subjects, right? The CADI and so on that we talked about, to get some relief there because we now have a pay for. And so for continuing resolution, it has to be budget neutral, which it now all is. So we don't know if we're going to get another bite at the apple. We did send a letter up yesterday in support of the continuing resolution.
Specifically because of the delay of the Cadillac tax and the repeal for HIT in 2019, we wanted to make sure to support the continuing resolution because of those key aspects that we really need.
We've lobbied on for 2 years now. You know, now it's this is it. So,
and those are the pieces.
It's a political matter now.
Oh yeah, yeah. And those are the pieces we need to be able to get them to move on to healthcare stabilization. If we can get some of those tax pieces done, which is another push for this continuing resolution and support there. But yes, it is a political matter now, as John pointed out, that they've got everything aligned as far as the budget neutrality of the CR. But now it's going to come down to the politics of it. And I agree, it's bad for folks on either side of the aisle. And they're both going to be pointing the finger across at it. Yep.
Last Thursday, Senators Isaacson and Coons introduced the companion legislation to remove broker compensation from the medical loss ratio, and NAHU activated Operation Shout to send nearly 10,000 messages to Capitol Hill. How else is NAHU working to get this issue addressed in 2018?
Well, first, thank you for those messages to the Hill. They really matter because they do count them, and that tells them how high a priority it is for them. Right? If the more responses they get from constituents, this raises it in the eyes of the member. So we have a meeting scheduled on Tuesday with Energy and Commerce Committee staff to do two things. Number one, discuss the request for information letter from the administration in the form of MLR relief to the administration. This is what we've said all along is the pathway for relief. And then number two, at the same time, garner as many co-sponsors for Billy Long's bill as possible. And we're having discussions about a similar effort on the Senate side with the HELP committee. I want you to know that all the agent groups have signed on to the letter, and both offices are quite thrilled to have that letter of support.
And another thing that we're doing with the Senate on the medical loss ratio is using them to ask for some support on the regulatory side. There was recently a request for information that came out from HHS asking about ways to assist in implementing rules or changing rules that are already in place. regarding competition in the market and trying to ease the burdens on consumers. And we strongly believe that this is something that is exactly geared towards that request for information. Changing the medical loss ratio would be better on some smaller carriers, allowing them to get into the market and easing the financial constraints that the medical loss ratio puts on them, as well as all of the other issues that we've discussed, I know, over the past several years of why we believe that this will also be better for consumers as far as their access to agents and brokers. So we put a letter together and are gaining some momentum in the Senate for them to sign on to this and then send it to HHS. So it will be a letter from the Senate to the agency asking them to do this, which is another just really powerful way of trying to gain the momentum for change, either through regulation or legislation. We're using all of the avenues that are available to us.
HHS Secretary nominee Alex Azar was advanced by the Senate Finance Committee on Wednesday and is expected to be approved by the full Senate shortly. Based on his committee hearings, what can we expect to be his top priorities at HHS, and what will NAHU be working with him on over the coming weeks?
Well, besides hopefully MLR, I think drug prices are going to be a high priority for him. He spent a great deal of time answering to those questions about high drug prices in the committees. He actually is an expert in this area, having worked for a drug company. So I think that'll probably be a big one for him.
I agree. I think there's no way that he will be able to escape the pharmaceutical industry and trying to control drug prices. We've also seen some recent action from HHS, although he has not been confirmed. I'm sure he is aware of the actions that are taking place. CMS just created a new conscience and religious freedom division to oversee civil rights questions about things like access to birth control and other things. CMS also released some guidance and relief for Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands from the hurricane disasters, with trying to get those folks some coverage with health insurance. So I think these are also going to be some themes that will continue to play out should Alex Azar be confirmed.
NAHU submitted comments this week on the restoration of the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period and prohibition of marketing during the open enrollment period, among other topics. What is expected in the final rule?
So with all proposed rules, we're always going to see some type of change before we get to the final rule. So I can't tell you exactly what we're going to see in the final rule, but I can talk about some of the things that we've commented on and are supporting that were in the proposed rule.
But before you get to that, let me just say this, that getting rules or proposed rules from the government is usually a scary thing, right? Because it's the unknown and how far are they going to go and so forth. And I have to say that from our perspective, this was probably as friendly as you could get for rulemaking. And they seem to be open to our suggestion, right?
Right. I would totally agree. And much of our comment letter, which there is a link to our full comments in the Washington Update, so you can read that there. But much of our letter is saying we support this, but we also want to point out ways to make this easier for you to implement. So things like electronic delivery of documents to the Medicare Advantage and Part D plan consumers, and just making sure that along with the electronic delivery, that we're not overseeing the fact that some of these consumers are those that have the most limited access to internet, and making sure that they're not only able to access this electronically, that those consumers that want to receive hard copies are still able to do so. There's also changes to the Medicare Advantage plan uniformity requirements, and we have posed questions about these just to make sure that as we're changing to make sure that we have the uniformity requirements, that it doesn't affect any of the non-discrimination provisions that we see in other rules and laws, from MMA to the Affordable Care Act to Americans with Disabilities Act. So those are some things that we're just pointing out for clarification. And we do expect to receive some what we call sub-regulatory guidance on exactly how those interfaces will interact. And when we say sub-regulatory guidance, That means just some of those notices and guidelines that come out that are not part of the rulemaking procedure, but come out kind of after when we have a final rule. We've also supported their movement towards relaxing the what they call the meaningful difference requirements for certain plans. And we believe that this will result in more competition and increase the choices for the consumers that are in those markets. So those are always pieces that we are looking for when we're looking at these proposed rules. There's also a bit here within changing that meaningful difference requirement that we think is going to allow for more price transparency, which the Medicare plans have always been a leading advocate for and have kind of paved the way for others to do the same. And so we're hoping that they'll do that here as well. And then the other pieces that I think that just from the day-to-day aspect of agents and brokers that work in the Medicare space that I think is important to point out, there is a piece here that we're supporting and requesting clarification from that reduces the compliance program training requirements for agents and brokers. And we're requesting clarification because we want to make sure that these training requirements don't completely go away. But we do hear from many of you about the repetitiveness of having to do this training and the time commitment that it takes from you all. And so we're asking for clarification of ways that this can be better managed with the training program, possibly looking at ways that it can mirror some of the exchange training that folks that are involved in the federally facilitated marketplaces have, where they have their short renewal education that they do every year now, instead of having to do the full training program for the exchanges and possibly having that mirrored for Medicare. And then the other piece that I think agents and brokers are going to be really excited about are revisions to the communication and marketing materials and activities rules for Medicare. And here I think agents are going to be really excited because there is a change that loosens up exactly what the marketing materials rules are, what qualifies there, what has to be approved by CMS, and it's a shorter list of what needs to be approved by CMS for those marketing materials. So I think when we get the final rule, we're going to be really pleased with it, and it's going to make the day-to-day activities and the plan designs within Medicare Advantage a lot better.
Tomorrow marks 1 year since President Donald Trump took office. What are your thoughts on where we stand with health policy a year out, and what are your predictions for the coming year?
Well, I think that there's a lot of promise, and it's a matter of establishing a working relationship with the Congress and the President to have a unified policy place. And we're not there yet. I think that's not the President's strength, healthcare, and he still think he needs good advisors around him and listen to the other side, you know, listen to Congress and what they're thinking. And speak with one voice. Today was a perfect example. I was on a whip call yesterday asking for support for the continuing resolution on all those good health policy issues that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast. And then for the president to come out this morning and say something totally contrary on CHIP doesn't make Paul Ryan's job any easier. So there's still a ways to go. I think there are a lot of people on the Hill who still want to get something done. I don't think that we've mentioned this, but the Problem Solvers Caucus has dropped their bill, which follows the outline of what on a previous podcast that we've discussed, bipartisan solutions to the healthcare conundrum that we're in. Many common sense solutions in there that we would support. That's kind of my take on it.
And John started off his comments by saying that the coming year has a lot of promise, but promises are hard to keep. And I think that that's what we learned over this past year, right? From the promises that we had on the campaign trail for healthcare reform and other pieces. So I think there is a lot of opportunity, whether it's taken up by Congress is the next question, on whether it's supported by the president is the other piece there to get things moving. But I do think we'll see especially once we get past this continuing resolution and we've funded the government for more than, you know, like a month, I think that we are going to see that Congress does want to take on some healthcare issues. I don't think that we're going to see larger bills that they tried to push through like this past year. They are going to be very mindful that it's an election year, and those that have 2018 next to their name for re-election are going to be very mindful about what they're doing. But I think they're also going to be looking for a way to try to work together to get something passed, because at this point, neither party can move forward without the other. And it's going to be a lot of compromise, but hopefully they'll live up to their promise.
I've always felt that the greatest flaw with the ACA was that we weren't all in the lifeboat together. It should have been bipartisan. And I think that was the greatest lesson learned out of that experience, was that even if you can go it alone, you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I hate to see Republicans repeat that kind of attitude about policy and legislation. We should do this together.
That is all the time we have for this week's episode. We'd like to thank Marcy Buckner and John Green for joining us for the Washington Update podcast from the National Association of Health Underwriters. Thank you for listening.